afternoon and welcome to the programme. Bill Clinton, the former US president, has singled out plans for Elephant Castle as an example for sustainable urban growth. He's chosen it as a flagship environmental project at a climate change summit in South Korea, also being attended by the mayor, Boris Johnson. Our political editor, Tim Donovan, reports now from Seoul.
It's been called many things over the years, but never a world leader. Today, Elephant and Castle moved out of the grim urban shadows and into the international spotlight. The £1 billion redevelopment of the area has been chosen as a groundbreaking environmental project, building in features which will mean it generates more energy than it uses. And today it was blessed by the Global Climate Change Foundation, run by Bill Clinton.
I studied all the plans, you know, I got a summary of all 16 of these developments. But it's big, it's very exciting, because if you can do a carbon positive development that big, then no one in the world will have any reason not to do it.
So you've seen the future, and it's Elephant and Castle in South London.
I've seen the future, and I think all these carbon positive buildings are it.
The local council, Southwark, is delighted with the presidential seal of approval.
Well, it's fantastic, because London is a world city, and our aim is to make Southwark a world-class quarter of London. The Elephant and Castle at the moment is a bit of a joke area around London. People run it down, but actually it should be a major retail centre for the whole of London. And believe us, if we get this right, everyone will be coming to do their shopping at the Elephant and Castle.
There is a long way to go before this unlikely eco-landmark takes shape, but one visitor's guaranteed.
And I told him the next time I had some time in London, I'd come see it.
Tim Donovan, BBC London News.
London is home to some of the richest people in the world, but a report launched in East London today says we also have the highest rate of poverty in the country. Despite government pledges, the gap between rich and poor continues to widen, and nowhere is this more evident than in London. Sarah Harris reports.
Maureen Roberts has been living in North London for 20 years on no more than £50 a week to spend on herself. When she became a lone parent of three children and disabled through arthritis at the same time, she found it hard to accept where she was being housed on what she calls a sink estate in North London.
I did literally cry when I was told where we were being sent to look at a flat. And I said, I don't want to go there. I really don't want to go there.
For years, Maureen didn't even know she was eligible for disability living allowance. She says being so close to such wealth in London was a challenge as a mother.
The difficulty is we are 15 minutes walk away from Stoke Newington and Clissold Park, and it's a very kind of up-and-coming area and has been for a long time. And obviously, your children see the difference.
Well, joining me now from East London is one of the authors of the report, Peter Kenway. Thanks very much for joining us here on BBC London this lunchtime. Why do you think there is such a divide in the capital between the rich and the poor?
Well, I think on the one hand, there's a shortage of work, there's extensive low pay, and there's also, as we all know, very expensive housing. And that really weighs particularly heavily on people on lowest incomes. And then, of course, on the other side, there are lots of people, and we're not talking here just about the super rich. There are lots of people who are very well paid, living in very nice houses. And in some sense, you've got this kind of poverty amidst prosperity.
And the mayor, Boris Johnson, actually says he'd like to see the Londoners who pay the taxes, more of their money stay in the capital. Do you think that would actually help?
I think there is actually a very important issue. It's not really touched on in the report today from City Parochial Foundation, but an important issue about the taxes that low-income households and low earners pay, both in income tax and national insurance, and also, of course, in council tax. And there's no magic bullet here, but certainly looking at ways of lifting the burden on low earners would be a useful part of the answer.
So how else do we go about narrowing this gap?
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
How do we make this gap less of a problem? I mean, what other ways do we go in tackling this problem?
Oh, well, I think a recognition, it sounds perhaps a bit slight, but I think it's very important to recognise it first. And one of the points we're making here in the report, a lot of effort's gone into showing really where people who are on low incomes live. And it's very clear that one hand it's spread across the capital, but on the other hand it's also very much concentrated in the east. Now, I'm standing here in Hoxton Square, and the truth is that that isn't really the east that we're talking about here. We're talking about southeast London. We're also talking about further east than this, Hackney, beyond Hackney, Newham, Barking and Dagenham. And I think it's a London that people who, certainly here at Westminster, or if I may dare say it, in the BBC, it's not a London that they're familiar with. And I think making people aware of what London is really like, rather than the little bits that we're all personally familiar with, is an important part of this.
Peter Kenway, thanks very much for joining us. Policing the Tamil protest in Parliament Square has so far cost the Met £8 million. This morning, the Commissioner, Sir Paul Stevenson, told a committee of MPs that the demonstration was stretching police resources. The protests are now in their seventh week.
Whatever the rights and wrongs of any demonstration, it does have to be said that at its moment in time, policing that demonstration is a huge drain on the resources that should be available to Londoners, and it is damaging the Met performance, and it does lead to lack of policing on the streets of London.
Workers on one of London Underground's busiest tube lines are to stage another 24-hour strike following a similar stoppage last month. Members of the RMT union based on the Victoria line will walk out at 9 o'clock tomorrow evening. Transport for London has condemned the action. A Westminster committee has concluded today that limited resources hampered the checks on the London bombers. But within the Muslim community, there are fears that a breakdown in trust with the police could mean vital intelligence to prevent future terror attacks could be missed. Well, our special correspondent, Kurt Barling, is in Westminster. So how has this breakdown in trust come about, Kurt?
Well, Louisa, this is a long report, big on detail. At the very end of it, it goes into the question of radicalisation. After 7/7, the issue of how these young men got into a position where they wanted to plant these bombs. The government's response has been a strategy called contest. And in London, very much the focus has been on a part of that strategy called prevent, which is where the police engage with local communities. Many of those local communities, particularly the Muslim community, are saying that the consequence of this strategy places too much emphasis on security and linking those issues of security with the Muslim community. And it is driving people away from making contact with the police and security services.
Islam has become the discussion rather than terrorism. The root causes of why these four bombers did what they did is lost. Who talks about why they did it? It's not why they did it. It's now what we're talking about is, oh, these people are likely to do it.
Ultimately, the report stresses that the key thing here is trust between communities and the police. Actually, in Crevice, in the fertilizer bomb plot, it was the public that came forward with the evidence that made all the difference. And I quote just briefly from the head of MI5, who said, "We will do our utmost to hold back the physical threat of attacks, but alone this is merely containment. Long-term resolution requires identifying and addressing the root causes of the problem." In other words, dealing with those communities and building trust between the authorities and those communities. Louisa.
Kurt, thanks very much. Kurt Barling there. The Green Party launched their European election campaign today next to an air quality monitor station. They want to highlight the issue of London's poor air quality and say that voting Green in the election will help in the global fight against climate change.
People should be voting Green not just because they care about the environment, but because they care about social issues, about keeping good quality public services, and about equality in society, human rights. Greens have a proven track record on all of those things.
Now, with Wimbledon only a few weeks away, hopes of British success are high in the shape of Andy Murray. But behind them, there is a lack of talent. So 60 of the country's top youngsters have been brought together at the National Tennis Centre in Roehampton to try and find the stars of the future. Chris Slegg has more.
Now, this might not quite be Wimbledon, but practising behind me are some of the best 8 to 10-year-olds in the country. They've been invited here by the Lawn Tennis Association, who hope to unearth some potential Wimbledon stars of the future. Someone who does know about playing at the very highest level is Greg Rozetsky. Greg, former world number 4. You're running your eye over some of these youngsters. What are you looking for?
I think we're looking for what their physical abilities are, what their mental abilities are, and whether they really love the game.
That's always been a worry in this country, a lack of strength in depth. We had yourself and Tim Hemman, and now we've got Andy Murray, but not a lot below that. Do you worry about that?
No, I don't actually worry about that, because I think with the Talent ID, which we've been doing for the last 3 years, we've put in a good record for the future and getting a lot more kids out there. There's a lot more people playing, a lot more people competing, and things are getting a lot better.
I must ask, you know, with Wimbledon just 4 weeks away, about Andy Murray, what do you think his chances are? Could we finally have a British Wimbledon champion?
I think realistically, for the first time, we can say yes, he's got a chance to win a major and a chance to win Wimbledon. The new roof and the crowd behind him, I think he's ready to go all the way if he can handle the pressure.
Well, good luck to him. Thank you very much. I'll let you get back to your coaching. And who knows, perhaps some of these youngsters in a few years' time might be the next Greg Rusedski or Andy Murray.
Hopefully. Chris Slegg reporting there. Right, let's find out what the weather's got in store for us with Peter Cockcroft. And Pete, it's not tennis weather, is it really?
No, not really. Better for gardeners. I think they'll be quite pleased at Chelsea because, nature's watering can is working at the moment. But the showers will become fewer and farther between this afternoon. We should see more and more sunshine. And tomorrow is looking like it's going to be a cracking day at Chelsea. Now, we've still got this blustery breeze at the moment, but of course that's keeping any showers on the move. It should push them away from the London area this afternoon. We should end up with clear skies this evening and for the first part of tonight. We will eventually get some cloud overnight tonight, but it will turn quite chilly. I think temperatures down to 8 or 9 Celsius. 9 Celsius in London, 8 up in the Chiltern Hills. Now, tomorrow morning, what cloud there is should break up fairly readily. And we should end up with some long spells of sunshine. And the other thing you'll notice tomorrow is that the wind won't be as strong, and that means it's going to feel warmer. Temperatures up on today's top temperature, 20 degrees, 20 Celsius is 68 degrees Fahrenheit. And then it looks as though we'll get some more dry weather on Thursday, and hooray for the gardens, because the rain will be back with us on Friday. But this middle bit of the week, the driest, the warmest, and the sunniest part of this week, Louisa.
Thanks, Pete. Well, that's it. We'll be back with our programme at 6:30 with Realist Latif. But for now, from everyone on the Lunchtime team, goodbye.